Welcome to the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch, episode 24, covering F is Masculata and Soft Light. Man, that is quite a mouthful. F and Masculata, Brandon. Do you know your Latin? Do you know what that means?
It means bug. Puss bug.
That I got to tell you, this is one of the most disgusting episodes.
Isn't it
of
great?
The X-Files. It's so, this is by far the grossest episode yet so far in, over the course of the X-Files. Those disease sores are just disgusting, but I guess that's the point, right?
Yes. I love this episode.
Of course you do.
So much. What, you don't?
No, I love it. I love it too. Okay. But I know you gravitate towards this. I mean, you love Conspiracy and The Next Generation. That's your favorite episode. We've got heads exploding and people eating bugs. So I can totally see why you gravitate towards this one.
Bugs and exploding pus nodules.
But let's get into details here. So it first aired on April 28th, 1995. It was written by Chris Carter and Howard Gordon and directed by Rob Bowman, our buddy from Next Generation and a prolific X-Files director as well. He went on to direct the X-Files movie Fight the Future. So, this is a great episode, isn't it?
Yes, it is. This is one of my favorites from season two. I do really like the story of it and how there's Mulder and Scully are basically separated for the whole episode, right? And they're working on their own and they're focusing on their strengths. You know, and it shows there's a lot of good investigation, you know, and you got this guy, what's his name from Breaking Bad?
Yeah, Dean Norris.
Dean Norris working with Mulder, and he's just angry and wants to catch these guys, and Mulder's like investigating and coming up. He's like, well, did you bother to check the telephone over here and whatnot? And I don't know, it sees our heroes in a positive light in a situation that they don't quite understand because they're just thrown into the situation. You know, we don't get that friendly banter in this episode. It's not a silly episode. There's like no comedy in the episode at all. It's pretty serious from start to finish. And our characters are thrown right into it along with us a few minutes into the episode, right?
Right. You mentioned Dean Norris working with Mulder. We have Charles Martin Smith working with Scully. He's one of the doctors in the hospital. Now, he's just one of these familiar faces. I don't think there's one thing that I know him from. But you just know that guy. This is the point in the X-Files, you know, season two, season three, they're starting to get these big-name guest stars. You know, we'll talk about it again with Soft Light coming up with Tony Shalhoub, too. So these are famous people that are, and that helps, you know, elevates everybody's game when you got these A-list guest stars.
I know, like, they could go anywhere. They could get, like, something crazy like Jesse Ventura and Alex Trebek at some point, even.
who knows what awaits us, right? But, yeah, the whole prison lockdown thing, I mean, there was something about... It was like the 90s, and they talked about this in the X-Cast episode that focused on this, but there was like this disease craze, right? They had The Stand, you had Outbreak, right? And even books like The Hot Zone as well. So there was a real, you know, fear in the air, you know, about diseases spreading back then. And I mean, I guess even now, I mean, you look at H1N1, bird flu, stuff like that. I mean, that's still, whenever anything like that comes up on the news, people go insane, right? But that ties into the scene with Cigarette Smoking Man in Skinner's office, which to me, that really elevates, like, this was already a good episode, but that, like, elevates it a lot more. When you kind of side tie in mythology stuff to these standalones, as you do in the next one as well, that's a great conversation between Mulder and the Cigarette Smoking Man. Mulder tells Smoking Man, he says, you can't protect the public by lying to them. And he just says, it's done every day.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like, well, so, and
Scully's contrary too. And when Mulder's like, "What if people die because we didn't release the truth?" And Scully says, "What if people die because we did?" You know, and it is one of those things. Like, I personally, I don't know. Like, call me crazy if you want or whatnot. I believe that when we go, we're gonna go from some plague like this. Like, you know, with people don't take their medicine enough, so that, you know, these diseases are becoming more immune to medication and things like this. You know, with the cross border traveling all over the place every single day and how easily things can get transmitted, and the fact that people don't even wash their hands. There's a guy at my work I know, he doesn't wash his hands when he goes to the bathroom ever. Like, these are the things that are gonna spread diseases. Like, people don't take care of themselves like they should. I really do believe that when we do go, you know, 50 years, 100 years, whenever, right, society's going to be wiped out by a plague.
Well, you know, I do think we are a lot more germ conscious nowadays. I know my mom used to carry around, you know, baby wipes in the car, and, like, you know, and people used to, like, make fun of her. Even my dad used to make fun of her, like, oh, he's using those for, right? Whenever you fill up on gas, you know, wipe your hands off, stuff like that, right? Because you don't know how many people are touching these things, right? You don't know what escaped convicts with the government created disease. Yeah, it's just gone through here. But, you know, nowadays, you know, that they're like the adult wipes, right? And there's Germex and stuff like that. So I think we're a lot more present-minded about this kind of stuff. If you go into places that even have hand sanitizer, lots of stores have it on a counter. They have a dispenser for it. So I do feel like this is, at least people are more aware of it now Maybe episodes like this and movies, you know, like Outbreak and stuff like that have freaked people out about it enough for
right,
people to take it more seriously.
That is the catchphrase, and that's the scary thing, right? You know, antibacterial, right? You know, trans fat free, right? I mean, like, it's just their catchphrases and their things that are there to make people feel safe. But I don't think that those things are actually going to make anybody safe. I know people who use that hand sanitizer rather than wash their hands. And it's like, you need to still wash your hands, you know? You still have to, right?
Well, it's like, but not brushing your teeth and just doing mouthwash. You know, they complement each other. They're not mutually exclusive.
Doing
together.
But I mean, like, trans fat free. I mean, I was in this grocery store and I saw a bag of potatoes. It was French fries. It's a bag of potatoes. It says trans fat free. Well, I hope it's trans fat free. It's a bag of potatoes, right? So somebody goes home. They think they're making the conscious choice to make with the right food. And they go and they cook it up and they pour oil all over it or whatever, and all of a sudden this is no longer healthy. But they think it's healthy because of what the key phrase is on the packaging, right? And it's just, these are just things that are designed to placate people and make them feel comfortable.
No, man, this episode raises some great questions, and ultimately really it comes down to Mulder, like, he's a truth sayer, but it's also like protecting the public good, and that element to it just is, it's just so interesting, and they don't answer that question. And nor should they, right? It would be pretentious of them too. But it raises the question, and you find yourself thinking about this stuff because you see, whenever there's a disaster of any kind, you know, like a hurricane or whatever, right? You see the chaos that the public devolves into, you know, because it's panic. So I you know, if I had to pick a side, I'd probably agree with the smoking man here. What about mm-hmm. you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the fear could, like, look at how they quarantined it and they got it all taken care of. Yes, I mean, the panic would have caused a lot more problems. This episode's got a couple of multiple levels to it, and this is probably my favorite episode from season two, right? I mean, like, this is a really, really good episode. I think X-Files really finished incredibly strong at the end of season two. Like, there's some really great episodes at this time, and I think this is the peak of its early seasons is this episode, I think. You know, and, you know, as far as funniness goes on it, and I was saying earlier, I don't think there's anything funny in it. I remember that the first few times I watched this, when the guy's on the bus with that kid, right, and just the way that it's edited quickly and stuff, I never thought that it was a bullet that shot him in the face. I thought the thing had exploded on his face so hard that it, like, shattered the bus window.
Oh.
Like, I don't know, that's what I thought happened, because they were building up and it's like stretching and getting so huge, and then like the window breaks, and I'm like, that's what I always thought. Somebody should edit this show though and put like comedic music underneath and like canned audience laughter whenever they get shot in the face with this stuff. Like that guy when Scully's in there opening that bag and he's like, oh, you shouldn't be in here, and he's just like, oh. Somebody should add like canned audience laughter to that. What do you think?
Sure, Brennan. Yeah, you mentioned how season two had a good run of episodes at the end. I think Soft Light is one of my favorite episodes of, you know, the show, period. Really high on my list. It first aired on May 5th, 1995, Cinco de Mayo, huh? It was written by Vince Gilligan, directed by James Contner. And hey, Vince Gilligan goes on to create Breaking Bad. So we had Dean Norris in this last episode. We got Vince Gilligan. Now this is his first episode working on The X-Files. And he goes on to write a lot of great episodes of The X-Files. And this isn't really the kind of story I would expect him to tell in The X-Files. It's a little kind of out there with the sci-fi and the science and all that. Now, that is probably the weakest element of this episode. You know, Tony Shalhoub has his shadow that goes around and sucks people into, you know, nothingness, which is extremely creepy and very unsettling. The fact that, like, this can just cross you innocently, mm-hmm. and you're nothing. You're oblivion, right? You're gone. Right. And there's no evidence you were ever there except for a little burn on the floor, right? Extremely unsettling. And we talked about Tony Shalhoub, talking about these guest stars. I mean, you know, he's famous. I guess he's most famous for Monk, a TV show he was on, as a kind of a neurotic guy. And he plays neurotic great in this episode as well, huh?
Was he on Wings?
He was on Wings. You're right. He was on Wings. And he's the guy in Men in Black that gets his head shot off time and time again, and it grows back. So what a resume for Tony Shalhoub, right?
Yeah. But, I don't know. I like this episode a lot. There's a lot of plot holes in it. You know, there's like
a lot of black holes in it.
Yeah. Plots as big as black holes in it that suck everything up. But I mean, it's a really good episode. And I mean, like the shadow at the beginning, you know, shadows don't work that way. They don't go under doors. And but I mean, like you how do you get around that? Like, I mean, the only other thing you could have done is if the guy opened the door and would have been like, quit yelling, and then, or like whatever happened to him, right? Got sucked up. But the effect of the neat little blue light that like went around the the hole, like after they got sucked up, was really cool. Like it was like this weird electric thing. There was a couple things in it that I didn't quite understand, and I didn't quite catch the reference. Like the every time he was walking by these lights, they would fade out. I didn't quite catch the connection there. I didn't know what they were trying to say. Was he drawing electricity?
Well, like, I mean, he got infused with dark matter, so I want to say like there's a lot of weird science going on with him that even he doesn't understand. So that's what I chalked it up to. But no, that's a good point there. And there's a little callback here that I really liked at the beginning of the episode, because Mulder and Scully are called in because Scully had a protege, and she called in Mulder and Scully, and that's why they're on this case. So they're looking around this room, and they want to check the air vent, and she's like, "Oh, I don't think anyone could squeeze in there." And Mulder's like, "Oh, you never know." And I was like, "Yes," a very subtle reference to Squeeze, but very clever too. If you didn't know about Squeeze, it passed you right on by. But if you did, it's very rewarding. But I like this character. The subplot with Scully's old protege, because she's just, this is something like far beyond her, right? And she just doesn't quite can't wrap her mind around all this stuff, even at the end of the episode where she's trying to stop Tony Shalhoub, right? And he actually intentionally kills her. He hasn't intentionally killed anyone until then, but he's like, "Look, I'm not, if you arrest me, I'm going to just keep killing more people." Like, he's so concerned that if he doesn't atomize himself in the same machine, that the shadow could, you know, unleash and destroy everything. I mean, it's creepy stuff, and I like how it's vague. They don't quite technobabble us to death. They tell us just enough, like, "Hey, there's dark matter and there's a shadow," and you're like, okay, you know, it's a compelling enough story. There's enough layers going on here that it carries you through.
I love X in this episode too, and that shot when Tony Shalhoub's character is looking out that door window, and like X's face just comes in there. Like the first couple of times I saw that, man, that scared the pants off of me, because X has this glare, hey, like just crazy.
It's almost funny, but it's just because his face is just so huge through the little window there, and they both like look at each other. Like, oh, who's gonna move next? You know, and I love X, and like I said, X is my favorite character, and this is another reason why I love this episode so much, because he's so proactive in it. This is probably the episode where he does the most, right? Just of complete agency on his own, because he talks to Mulder, and you think he's helping Mulder out, but in fact, Mulder's helping him out, because he has his own agenda in here, and he goes and kidnaps this guy, and I actually kind of like how it all goes wrong for X, you know, because he's such a together kind of guy. Like, right. you expect him to just dominate every situation, and it kind of does. And you can even see, like, this is the only time you've seen this guy like ever phased, right? Yeah. On the show, he's like, "Oh no, this is more than I bargained for." But yeah, I mean, even the end of this episode, this is one of the creepiest endings of the X-Files, because the whole time, you know, Tony Shalhoub's greatest fear was, you know, being, you know, captured by the government and used.
Brains,
you know,
suck.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happens to him at the end of the episode. And you just see that all these, what you assume are just experiments, like they're flashing all these lights at him, and you see the shadow, and just classic X-Files ending. Yeah, yo, exactly. Yeah. And that reminds me, whenever you get someone isolated in a horrible situation and it just ends like that, you're like, "Man, I'm glad I'm not him," right? Like, it's very unsettling. And it sticks with you. So, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the classic trope that I hate so much in all media, the enhance. They figure out where he works by you see Tony Shalhoub sitting in the train station. They use some security footage, and Mulder's like, "Hey, well, let's enhance that," right? And they zoom in, and they zoom in, and they zoom in, and they still see what the logo is. Like, it doesn't work that way. The image would break down and be all pixelated, but I understand why they have to, like, you know, go from point A to point B that way in stories like this.
Yeah, but hit the enhance button.
All right, Brandon. What a simple TV viewer you are. But yeah, no, this is a great, much like FS Masculata, it's a standalone episode, but you put in these mythology elements, like Cigarette Smoking Man was in the last one, X is in this one, you know, so it's the perfect balance between the standalones and the mythology. And going through all these episodes, I think the general consensus with people, and let me know what you think, is I think the standalone ones are better, right? You enjoy them more because they're more self-contained. They're more fulfilling. The mythology, you know, builds up, it builds up, it builds up. You don't know where it's going to lead when you're watching. You're like, "Oh man, it's going to be such a great payoff." And then a lot of times it's not the greatest payoff, so it kind of undercuts what you've been watching. But these are just completely self-contained and fulfilling in their own right.
Right. Yeah, I think they hold up the most. I've been watching with my wife, and she's hating it. Like, she considers herself an X-Files fan, but she's like, "You're picking terrible episodes to watch." And I keep telling her, I'm just watching them in order. This is the order they came out in. And she's like, "Just terrible." So the last couple I've actually watched on my own. She'll probably watch Anasazi with me, because she actually likes the conspiracy elements better than the standalone ones. So, but I think the standalone ones definitely hold up more as time goes on.
Right, for sure. Well, this has been a couple of great standalone ones here.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Very strong finish. Yeah, absolutely.
So, Brendan, if people want to find you and talk about that disgusting pus that's developed on your neck, where can they find you on social media?
They can find me at the hospital talking to the doctor, because it's ready to just...
All right, well, you can find me at... No.
Or you can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me on Trek FM doing a couple of great shows called Melodic Treks, which is all about the music of Star Trek. Or you can find me on also doing Warp 5 with my friend Floyd, which is all about Enterprise. And you can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast that I do with my friends Chris and Tom. And Zach, where can people find you when you're not in the process of going through the brain suck?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville. You can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. And we talk about the Young Superman show from the early 2000s in that podcast. And like you, Brandon, I'm a host of my own show on Trek FM, Standard Orbit. We talk about the adventures, the old and new adventures of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. I do that every week over on the Trek FM network with my friend Ken Tripp.
Yeah, it's a good show, but it's not as good as mine.
Well, you know. Insert witty comeback here. but we're one big happy fleet over there at Trek FM. As for the X-Cast, you can find us on Twitter at the X_cast, or you can find us on Facebook at the X-Cast X-Files Podcast Fan Group. It's fun to interact with everybody over there. Well, that's going to do it, Brandon. This is our last block together on the Pod Watch, but it's been fun, man. I've enjoyed geeking out with you about the X-Files.
So sad. It's been a lot of fun.
But just because Brandon and I are gone, don't let that stop you from listening, guys. Tomorrow we're coming back with Our Town and Adisazi. But until then, remember, trust no one.
Mulder!
Scully! Scully!